Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. Yeah, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the fire. Straight up, we've got an interview with the Homeless People's Union. They're talking about Melbourne City Council's employment of private security guards to target homeless people. And I'm going to get Aku to take over from here and introduce you to our guests.
Yeah, hey, everybody. So we're really lucky to have two people in today. We've got Meg, who's a lawyer and an originating member of the Homeless People's Union. And we've also got Fluffy, who works in harm reduction for a homelessness service and has herself lived experience as a homeless person. So as you just mentioned, Ankia, it's pretty distressing, the recent scheme that's been announced by the City of Melbourne. It's a $2 million program. It goes for 4 years. And I think it's to employ about 10 private security guards to target homeless people. And what we've heard so far is that these from homelessness support services is that these guards are being used essentially to bully homeless people, and they're not even, they're supposed to be targeting them. I think the idea is for people who are begging or public drinking, but they're just intimidating those who are occupying space. But
How long is it for? For 2 years?
I think it's for 4 years. Let's ask Meg about that. Let's ask Meg and Fluffy. Can you tell us a little bit more? About this program, this 4 year program.
So it was a pilot that's been going for 2 years, and they've just invested $2 million for the next financial year. And it is for this group called Crownland Security, which is a private security group. And it's actually quite difficult to understand what they're targeting, other than that we know that they're targeting homeless community who are using public spaces. But what they've said is their concerns are around aggressive begging, which is a bit of a contradiction in terms. Also around public consumption of alcohol, which is really concerning because the recommendations around not policing that in a coercive way come out of loss of life and tragedies that have affected our community.
And the racialized element of that kind of policing as well, is that right? With like move on laws around public drinking and the way it's targeted specifically around towards black people to First Nations people? There's an element of that.
I think the issue with the homeless community is that there's a massive overrepresentation of First Nations people, and there's also a massive overrepresentation of people who are have different experiences of trauma. Childhood sexual assault, family violence, childhood family violence. There's a lot of women who are homeless. There's a lot of children who are homeless. There's all kinds of vulnerabilities, and First Nations people make up a big proportion of that community. So according to the City of Melbourne's own data, it's 17%. According to some homelessness services, they'd have 33% First Nations people who are accessing their services homeless in their own lands. So it's an inherently racialized issue, and it's also particularly disturbing that it's called Crownland Security, and it's around the use of public space and what's legitimate use of public space. It's not around violent crime. It's not around things that the police would ordinarily be in charge of addressing. What the anecdotal reports we're getting, and also we're getting a lot of footage, is of, you know, groups of these private security guards standing over women and men who are homeless, you know, and that experience. I think one of the key things for the Homeless Persons Union and anyone with lived experience of homelessness is that that's a very fragile space to be living in emotionally, and that experience and your experience of that kind of intimidation is very intense when you're so vulnerable already because you have no home to go to. So the other thing that they've been reported to be doing is confiscating people's property and provoking people, essentially. Then they can call the police once there's a provocation, because there is no offending per se. One of the things I just want to mention about Beg Arms is that is the offence under the Summary Offences Act that they could hook. That's a legitimate criminal offence, but you can't do citizens arrests just for any old thing. Like, it's a highly risky way to, I mean, imagine if we decided, oh, let's have a gang and we'll do some citizens arrests about some issue. But with Beg Arms, homelessness is a reason why you would have that infringement knocked out in court. So it's very circular. Like, why would you be prosecuting something that the courts are going to knock out because you're homeless and you've got a special circumstance which would exempt you from that penalty? So why they're doing it is that in the CBD, most of the properties are owned by businesses, and I think it's a prejudice issue, but I actually don't think it's the CBD itself has a broader imprint, because it is the CBD. Like, they have an obligation and to the community more broadly, and I actually don't think the community more broadly would support this if they knew about it, because people want to give. It's a right to give. We have a right to give to people who are in need. That's our autonomous decision. And I just want to mention one other thing, is that a lot of people are in the CBD for safety reasons, because the lighting's really good, and it is safer for women and children actually to be homeless in the city. And the other thing is, a lot of people are exiting prison, and we know that there's no housing options for a lot of those communities, so they're going straight in. And this type of thing, when you put it against all the other issues in terms of housing and demolition of public housing and all this stuff, highway to prison for First Nations people. So it's a full-on issue, and it's been rolled out in Maribyrnong. And I'm going to toss over to Fluffy, who knows a bit more about the community affected.
Thank you. So working within the community, we have seen a lot of Crownland Security confiscate our community members' belongings, including medication, including wallets, money, and also material aid. Services don't have enough resources to keep giving out material aid when the council keeps confiscating it. You'll often find myself and co-workers chasing after council trucks, asking for sleeping bags, asking for blankets, because we don't have the resources when they just keep taking the belongings of the our homeless community. I have seen one day walking to pick up my granddaughter from childcare, right in front of childcare, I saw two Crownland securities on the back of a homeless person, pinning them to the ground. And I approached them and asked what they were doing, and they stated that person had spat on them. I explained it does not justify the violence and the brutality of what they were doing for someone that had spat on them, because anyone that approaches anyone that's homeless, that's already a threat, whether you don't have that intention or not. They get so much brutality from the police and from other community members outside of homelessness because of the stigma that's created around homelessness and drug use. Going back to what I was saying, I've lost a bit then. But so of course they're gonna perceive anyone that approaches them as a threat, and obviously this person felt threatened, and her defence was to keep them back. She did spit. When I was explaining about, this is not the way to approach it. Sit down, have a conversation with these people. And their answer back to me was, but it was a big spit and we're going to call the police. So I asked them what their plan was, what did they want this person to do? And they stated they want this person to remain off the buildings. So they are not wanting the homeless to lean against any buildings, to go to an area that they suggested, which this day was the tram seating. So I sat down with this person. Person was petrified, in tears. I introduced myself, asked this person if they had eaten. They said no, but they'd like a drink and a cigarette. And I said, okay, I said, would you like to come for a walk with me? Let's go and get it together. At that stage, the decision was if I didn't help her move on, so-called move on, then they were going to arrest her. Mm-hmm. So I took her for a walk to Tobacconist and Coles. We got something to eat. And they were following us. Crownland Security were following us. They said they'll be calling the police. And I said that was absolutely unnecessary. She's moved off the building. Police arrived. The Crownland Security assured me that she would not be put in cuffs. This person would not be arrested. I overheard, I think 15 police turned up at that stage. I overheard a police officer say, I'm going to put her in cuffs. So I approached that police officer and advised them what the conversation was with Crownland Security. And they came over and asked my permission to take a photo of this person for their records. And I said, I don't have authority to give that permission. You'd have to ask that permission that person directly. She stated no. They took a photo anyway. And then they went on their way and she had to sit on the tram seats. Otherwise, the police were coming back to arrest her. That's one of many, many, many stories I've witnessed, not only working in the sector, but also personally as well.
Mm. That's a story of where you intervened as well when you were present. But like, what typically happens if a support person isn't there? What typically happens?
The footage we're getting is that you have Crownland Security approaching in a group. Mm. With council officers as well and Jeez. Police. Jeez. So you have a person who's the homeless people, like even if you're a really tough person, you are vulnerable at that point. So you have a very large group of people in uniforms approaching you and what we've got recordings of is that kind of provocation, you know, like in these kind of it's very difficult to know what it is. So the move on power applies where there's a potential breach of the peace that could occur. So if you provoke that situation, then you can issue a move on power. If someone doesn't comply, you can arrest them. But you can see how this kind of area of the law can be bastardized quite quickly.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, it's just the thing that's really striking about it is the inhumanity of it.
Yeah.
And also when you go to the city, for me, like, it's so uncomfortable because the homeless crew are carrying around all of their belongings. Mm. They keep trying to keep moving, not stopping anywhere. And they belong there, you know, that's part of, that's their country as well, you know, and I'm quite certain the Wurundjeri Land Council hasn't been consulted about Crownland Security operations, for example. And that's an important question. Like, this isn't, it's quite painful to be around.
What about human rights? I see it mentioned there. Like, what is the status of human rights legislation in this country? Or are they just charters? There's no real enforceable laws regarding human rights.
This particular area is interesting because I guess one of the things is that in order to litigate, you'd need a client or a number of clients. There's no way that people aren't being targeted along discriminatory grounds. So you have direct discrimination where you identify someone as being, for example, Aboriginal or as having a mental illness and you decide to target them. And then you have indirect discrimination where the fact that you're targeting that community means that you're discriminating. And we know that with that particular with the homeless community, more people have, like most people have, disabilities that are, you know, and a large number of people are either First Nations or people of colour. They've got a range of issues that should be protected, but human rights, you can fight about it in court, and I think that one of the things that's been really interesting is I went to the City of Melbourne initial meeting in my lawyer capacity and raised the Charter of Human Rights and freedom of movement, freedom of association, but also these questions around using force in that subtle way. So if a number of people surround someone and they don't feel free to leave, that's an imprisonment in common law, and a lot of the risks around that. But I feel like it's a very confrontingly I can't see where this has come from in a way, but it's kind of spooky because it's a big throwback to the originating state of that area, like when it was, so you know, the time of the Depression. There's just so much history behind these behaviors of saying that's not a legitimate use of space, you can't be here, and the impacts of that on First Nations people, but also children. That really upsets me a lot, because a lot of children, they're escaping violence, and that's why they're in the CBD. And we know that there's not enough services. We know that people will be waiting for 20 years to get public housing, and that, you know, they're supposed to have telephones. Well, they don't, you know. And also a lot of women are in the CBD and they're escaping serious family violence. Like, you don't choose to be homeless unless there's some sort of drivers around that. And if you feel safer sleeping on the street in the CBD, your options are pretty limited. So what it reflects about our community is what's disturbing, and it's really important that we get it out there, because I actually believe that most people don't support this. They would not support this. Like, a lot of people want to give money to people who are coal mining, you know, like they want to. That's the choice. So I feel like getting that information out there and really highlighting it outside of that mainstream news where they're like just saying, oh, this is an ugly issue that we've got to deal with, just unpacking that. Come on, mate. Like, what are you talking about actually? So the Homeless Persons Union's got an online petition, which their Facebook's operational. It's got over 1,000 signatures. Really encourage people to tap into that, and also to tap into the opportunities. There's a council meeting on the 21st of this month, where Homeless Persons Union's going to be facilitating people with lived experience of homelessness or currently homeless to give their evidence directly to council members. So watch that Facebook page. Because
what is that Facebook page?
Homeless Persons Union.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. And also just to say, we're not affiliated with any actual union.
Which is
a flat structured collective of people who want to provide that platform, because those voices don't get heard very often. So our job is to make sure that that's happening.
Excellent. And I guess that's the thing that distinguishes the union from other homeless service providers, right? It's a platform for people with lived experience to advocate for themselves and to collectively organise.
Yeah, and we're unfunded, so there's nothing to lose, you know?
And anyone can attend the council meeting on the 21st of October.
Yeah, absolutely encourage people to attend the council meeting. Absolutely encourage people to connect with the Facebook page and also with the petition. There's an opportunity to express people's feelings about it. You don't have to have lived experience at all. It's like everybody's got a right. That particular imprint of the city I think legislatively, it's not just the property, it's not just the business owners. That's a central place that belongs to everyone, and we share it.
Mm.
People are entitled to express their view about who belongs there and what kind of space we want to have, and also how people feel about having a lot of police and a lot of private security
presence. Definitely. Mm. It's really concerning because it also sounds like what you were mentioning, Fluffy, with people being told, like this particular woman being told that she can't lean against a building. Like it very much seems like these guards are employed to protect private property as well.
Funny you should say that. I had a conversation with a police officer asking questions about why the homeless are being moved on to, and his response was, he said to me, you're not going to like this. It is not a grey area. It is very black and white. We cannot progress as a society when we have the homeless leaning against the buildings that cannot be rented out. Yeah.
I didn't even know how to make sense of that statement.
No. So progressing as a society to me would be to house our homeless people.
Yes.
And to make sure they're fully supported.
Yeah.
And the support shouldn't stop when they're housed, because that's the most critical part of their journey.
Yeah.
Is they're coming from the streets, going into four walls, having no community around them, not being able to navigate their way through being housed. So support is needed after people are housed as well.
Mm.
It's not just getting people housed and say, see you later.
Yeah.
We need funding for resources to be able to do this, because our community will just end up being back on the streets.
Yeah.
Which I've seen multiple times. Yeah. More.
Or in prison, right? Like recidivism rates are really
high. And that's another... that's another gap that we have actually found with working in the sector is when they're in custody, even if they are a previous client of an organisation, that organisation is not notified when they are released. So to put services and things in place, we actually don't find out till they walk through an organisation's door.
Oh, wow.
We're being notified by lawyers if we've got consent, from our service users. So there's a lot of gaps in the system that is really failing a lot of communities at the moment, especially our homeless community. And one thing I do want to bring up is a lot of our homeless community will actually die before they get housing, which is have words for that. So you're looking at people that struggle on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And not just from the system. It comes from a lot of different angles, and the stigma and the narrative that's, been set about homelessness and addiction. And unfortunately, they are going to go through life as they are now and probably not even know what it feels like to have a roof over your head.
That's insane.
Which is your basic human right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes me think a lot about, so we door knock at 44 Flats United. That's like our bread and butter, to talk to residents about their experience with just being displaced. And there are just so many empty flats.
Mm.
And so many flats have, and Unc knows this better than I do, flats that have been sitting vacant for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's just insane. And then I've started to see something more recent years in my dad's flat. I accidentally opened the door on a different level, and there were people sleeping rough in public housing as well, like that. And to me, that signals how desperate the situation is now, that people have to squat in public housing, which is crazy because these units are empty already. And like you say, if people are going to have to wait 10 plus years and never actually see housing, it just, none of it makes any sense at all, other than if we look at it through a capitalist lens. Like, of course it makes sense. Yeah. It makes a lot of money for the people in the upper end of town.
And also I think the privatisation of prisons, like it's just like this is a highway to prison. It's obviously cheaper to house someone and support them.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, we have to think structurally. Yeah. Why is this occurring? Mm. And who is it benefiting?
And votes too, right?
Yeah.
When do you vote?
Yeah. That's, yeah. It's quite layered, but I think any opportunity for people to express their resistance would be really welcomed by the union, because we know that I know that there's a huge number of people who support homeless community, and one of the frames that they've got around this operation is aggressive outreach. What we actually need is resourcing, because there are no places to send people, and we don't need police and paramilitary to, you know, to refer people to housing services that don't exist. You know what I mean? Like, so
can you elaborate a little bit on like resourcing, just a little bit, like what kind of resourcing is like
housing, public housing? Is, I mean, that's the number one thing, and I think also support services. The other thing is, you know, we need to kind of decolonize our own minds around these experiences of people that are experiencing homelessness, trauma, and surviving on the streets, and really push back against those narratives that are punitive and discriminatory, because a lot of people internalize that as well, you know. And so they need allies. They need people who say, no, I respect your right to your life.
Australia was established as a convict penal colony. Seems like they don't know anything different other than the jail people. I mean, you see the growth of the jails here in Victoria, and youth jail, just one just opened just recently. And they want to fill them up. This is their business, and that's how they deal with things.
There's been a 400% increase in the prison population in the youth prisons since the bail reforms. So we're in a crisis. That's the reality. Absolute crisis, and whatever we can do to keep hope alive and to resist, that's where we need to be.
So what do we do? How can we, you know, what do we need to do?
For this issue,
short of a revolution.
For this issue, Homeless Persons Union is reactivating as a collective. We absolutely encourage membership of people with lived experience and allies, and that would be the collective that I think would be is really focused on this particular issue. But there's so many issues, get amongst it, you know. Like, there's, we need to be at the forefront, and also inform yourself. Like, I think some of these, the incarceration rates and what's happening, like, on the one hand we've got treaty and the truth-telling commissions and different things happening, but there's some really serious backtracking that's happening in terms of politics. And we need to be clear about that and be spreading that message. Like, a 400% increase in children's prisons is off the hook.
Disgusting.
And sorry, just to add about what you said, Uncle Robbie, what can we do? I would say, from a lived experience perspective, is make sure we treat everyone with respect and humanity. It doesn't matter if you're having a bad day. Those people could be doing a lot worse than anybody else. They are doing it a lot worse. A simple hi, a smile can brighten anyone's day. And let's start changing the stigma around homelessness. Let's start changing. People don't wake up to be addicted to any drugs, to be homeless. They're committing, you know, offences because they're surviving. And that's what I would just say, to appeal to everyone's humanity and to be considerate and kind. And even if you can't give money or anything like that, have a chat to them. They just want to be heard. Hold space for this community that is, that shouldn't be in the position where they are in 2025 especially.
I agree. It's, you ever seen the prices of houses lately? You know, I mean, you haven't got $1 million in your pocket. You haven't much chance of getting a house.
No.
So it's pretty grim out there. I'm just thinking, why don't they just go and take over a park, like the Treasury Gardens or the Exhibition Gardens, and establish a space where people can go who haven't got nothing. Yeah. I don't know. That's just an idea.
It's a beautiful idea.
We can focus on the issue and, you know, right next to the Parliament would be good.
Good idea.
I mean, every day leaving work, especially when it rains, you see these beautiful people crouching on a dog bed under this tiny little thing to keep safe when you're walking out of work knowing you've got a roof over your head, you've got food in the fridge, and you just can't do it. You can't do, like, it's frustrating. It's frustrating, and it should not be happening, especially to our First Nation community.
I mean, they're calling this group Crown Land Security. That's really offensive.
Mm. Yeah.
Our people spend a lot of time in this country in fringe dwelling camps. We had to do that, you know. Otherwise, you're in a reserve. And, you know, this is our tribal land. We never consented to the occupation. There's no consent. There's no treaties. The treaty they're talking about is rubbish. It's just state government legislation. It's just offensive, like every other piece of law they've ever made for our people. And so, you know, we never ceded our sovereignty over these lands. So, you know, I think we need to do something like a revolution in this country. And Australia's never had a revolution, but it's always been revolting as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, we need to really think about where we're going here. You know, got to step up, I think. And goes for all of us, you know. We're all vulnerable in a sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been chronically unhoused, very poor housing if we have housing. So we understand these issues on the streets and subject to this, to the state and their forces. That's why we do fill the jails in this country. It's a big industry as well. So, yeah.
Didn't they just allocate $780 million for another jail?
Yeah. I just seen a new one open for young people.
Yeah.
All down there, on the way down Geelong, it's just this jail. Jails everywhere down there.
What we could as a service do with that money, like, and locking people up is definitely...
It's got it all wrong.
Yeah.
It's all wrong thinking. Yeah. But like I said before, like, there's no enforceable human rights laws. Charters aren't enforceable laws. You can take it or leave it. So that could be a thing to aim at. Let's have human rights laws, basic human rights laws, that apply to everyone in this country. Yeah, that's something we could all get around and make sure happens.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is it may be that litigating, like if people experience injuries or, you know, they observe what's called excessive use of power, there may be sometimes that's the type of accountability these institutions do understand. appeals to their human nature might not be as powerful. But it is a bigger structural issue at the moment, because even with the public housing towers and the privatisation of public housing, and I mean, we're really in a very difficult, challenging time. And I guess the thing that is really strong in my feeling is that solidarity, leaning into the people who make you not feel crazy, and trying to educate yourselves and others around these issues and work together, because it's a very difficult time to be trying to work against these systems, and they don't make sense what they're doing. I don't understand, except for capitalism and racism.
Isn't a shelter supposed to be a basic human right according to international laws?
Should be. There is the International Covenant on Economic and Social and Cultural Rights, but we're so far from. There's human rights and there's litigation, but then there's also culture, and our culture is really easily. It's not a human rights driven culture. It's not as you said, we're a penal colony, you know.
That's right.
So that culture
over people.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
We've got 25 minutes of our program to go. So do you want to add anything before we wind up? So we're gonna play one of our stories from the Flats episode one. That's who was it?
Ayan. And she interviews you on it, Uncle.
So we've got a couple of minutes before we go to that. So
I just want to say it's an honour to be on your show, Uncle. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's an honour for you to be on my show. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
And we'll do it again shortly. We'll follow this. And 21st of October is down at the Melbourne City Council. What time of the day is it?
It's 7 p.m. I believe, and the details will be up on the Homeless Persons Union's Facebook page, and it's a speak out. Okay. Essentially, and we'll just try and get as much community participation as possible, and particularly lived experience to the front, First Nations to the front, yeah, is the way the union works, and so that's the way that would operate.
I reckon let's line up a few of these parks and make them our home. Mm. Somewhere.
Yeah.
We've got a bit of a precedence here at Camp Sovereignty. And we're in a battle with Melbourne City Council over that issue there, so we might better continue to do that. Anyway, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bunjil's Fire radio show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bunjil's Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.